barbarian groups named by late antique early medieval sources, and therefore they couldn't become correct by historical reasons. But the question is very attractive to discuss a little bit. The interpretations about written sources, archaeological sources, and how the interpretation change, sometimes directly with changing political situations. And this was the reason to make this contribution original for a German-Polish theater play. So, the first important act of Goths, the first sect of Rome, 410, where the Visigoths plundered, and this was quite central event. But there was a second plundering of Rome. It was 455, and this was made by the Vandals. So this is a very important fact for the interpretation, why I talk later. So, no. Okay, after plundering Rome, there, it's reflected, these are barbarians. You can write or read some sources like Augustine and others. But Goths are, in early medieval times, better known as founders of kingdoms. For example, the kingdom of the Visigoths in southwestern France and Hispania, or the so-called kingdom of the Ostrogoths in Italy, and also eastern kingdom, which was called Dori after the sources, and we have also some archaeology objects we can connect with these barbarians. So this barbarian Visigoths founded the kingdom in Gallia, with capital in Toulouse. And the first of these barbarians were building a very big palace building, nowadays interpreted as the palace of the Visigoths. And maybe there is a whole complex, the palace at this edge of the city in connection with the church. Maybe this is the church of the court of the Visigoths. And later in Spain, these barbarians still founded cities like Recopolis, and they minted coins, and they had also their treasuries, where the kings offer some objects, jewelry of typical barbarian style to the churches. And very famous is the treasury from Guasa, as also others. So in Italy, the barbarians are quite the same barbarian behavior, building palaces somewhere here, building as a church, churches. And this is a typical barbarian behavior in the early Middle Ages. And also, they made their coins, and the barbarian burial rite is to build mausoleums with cross on it, and they were very barbarian Christian. And also, incredibly, very far away, what they do there, they built walled cities with churches, for example, in Esquerman, or the same happened in Mango. And they used old antique towns like Kerch, where they made their horrible barbarian burials. And all the stories about Goths we know from Jordanes Gettica, written middle of the 6th century. And this is more or less the origin legend of the Amal, the royal family of the Ostrogoths. And it's a successful story. This family was of Scandinavian origin, there was a landing of east and west coast, as also GPs in three ships. It's the south Baltic coast, and then the victories against Rugi, Burgundians, and Vandals. Then they made a migration to the Black Sea. Maybe wrong place, because their kingdom there were destroyed by the Huns in 375. And then there is an important gap in the successful story of this family. Okay, then they crossed into the Roman Empire after the end of the Hun rule, and they founded their kingdom of kingdoms. The former Soviet archaeology identified the so-called Chernyakhov and Ostentana Demurish culture in northern, northwestern part of the Baltic Sea area as most possible region where we can locate the early Goth kingdom at the Black Sea region. And it was Kropotkin, still in the early 70s, who had seen that there is some ceramic marking the starting point of this culture, and this ceramic, not the normal late antique wheel turn, as usually used in the Chernyakhov culture, was handmade and had connection to northwest from the perspective of Ukraine. And then there was a Polish archaeologist, Richard Wolondiewicz, who analyzed the ceramic of the so-called Wielbar culture, and he defined the spread of the Wielbar culture based on the handmade pottery. And there was a starting point, area A and B, from the pre-Roman time. And then there was expansion in early Roman times, C and D, and the later ones, E, about the middle of the second century, and F, reaching Ukraine in the third century. So there was cultural connection on the base of ceramic between Baltic Sea and Black Sea. So maybe we can believe in the oral history of the Amal family. Even it was proved some years later by Andrzej Kurkowski, another more or less famous Polish archaeologist, who established generation for generation more or less the expansion of people coming from the area of northern Poland, migration to the Black Sea. Technology, I want to make a comic on it, but I have problems with this program to do so. But there is a question of Scandinavian origin. There is a theory of the homeland of the Goths in Scandinavia, maybe Western Gothland, Eastern Gothland, or Gothland Island. Okay, these regions are mentioned in an archaeology book from 1945. And then there's the idea, maybe they came to the coast somewhere at the Odra, at the Wisła River, or maybe central Pomerania. These are the ideas. And then they founded their first continental Gothic homeland. In the last years, there were analyzed some burial places which are characterized by stone circles and by barrows with stone rings. There was the idea, Scandinavia, there are a lot of stone constructions in connection with burials, so it should be proved that they came from Scandinavia because they have also stone rings and barrows with stone circles at the south coast of the Baltic Sea. But there's another problem, that this Wielbar culture have a little bit different burial rites. Principally, they have cremations and inhumations, But in some regions, like in Sudan's area, they have more inhumations, and in Middle Pomerania, there are more cremations. And if we look on the ideas of changing cultures, there's a so-called Oxivio or Oxford culture in the 2 centuries before Christ, which occupies Pomerania and Lower Vistula area, so-called Area A and B after Volontievich, and then somewhere about year zero comes next culture. This is the first phase of the Vilar culture, and we can see that the so-called Rugi or Bugindans living or burying the dead there changed completely by arriving across. So this is the idea. Problem is the same people. And they had never heard about 6th century written sources in this time. So what is identity? So, and then there is the central division between the pre-Roman Oxivi culture, that we have only cremation burials with weaponry, like this one, like this one. And then there's a later, very quite different Vilar culture, where we have cremations and inhumations, mainly without weapons. But if you're looking on the graves, it's quite a nice idea to divide them. But in concrete examples, it looks a little bit difficult to say there's one culture with their components or elements, and there's the other culture. Okay, we can do the same sites. Okay, then we have some written sources or the interpretation of some written sources. For example, the Germania of Tacitus from the 1st century. He mentioned a lot of names of Germanic tribes, and their assumptions to locate them. And one says there are Gotones, Rugi, and Lemovi somewhere at the Baltic coast. And also mentioned some Veneti, whatever this is. You had them yesterday also. And 1 century later, there was a map of Ptolemy, who also knows some names like Uticler, Vitonis, or Burgundy, and also Venedi. So this is the evidence for the first 2 centuries. And if we compare names by sources from the 1st and 2nd century with Giordanus from the 6th century, then maybe Rugi, or Multipli may be identified with Rugi or Umrugi by Giordanus, and the Burgundians from Ptolemy, maybe we can identify with the Burgundians by Giordanus. But Giordanus does not know Gotonus or Gotonus, as also he don't know any Rugi, which are placed in the ethnographical maps from Roman perspective south of complex of Gotonus or Rugi. But he knows new names, many new tribes, Goths and Gepids, and also Wandons. So it seems that some names of groups, whatever is behind these names, survived some centuries, others changed. And therefore, we could not compare the evidence of the 1st centuries with the evidence, written evidence, from the 6th century. So this is more or less the background, written sources and the archaeology evidence. And with this, both things were made interpretations about this area. And I start with famous Gustav Kossener, who was associate professor for German archaeology in Berlin. And he wrote a book first called The German East Mark, a homeland of Germans, from 1990. And in the same year, it changed the title, the Wiswa area, a very old homeland of the Germans. And background was clear. The conferences in Versailles was a question, what happened with Dines after the First World War when the Polish state was founded. So the trick is that the local title of the local publication from Dines was then used for every next book until mid of the 30s, and so it was quite clear. It was propaganda in a political question. But I don't know if he believed that archaeological propaganda helps anything. There was a Treaty of Versailles, and we had in this area, with the Delta area, the situation we had then three states. One was the new founded state of Poland, the Free State of Gdańsk, and the rest, this area, from the German Empire. And in this region, with the Delta area, the Treaty of Versailles had territorial results, and also the archaeology heritage management must change a little bit, because before it was all one region, and now this small part of Germany belonged, former Western Prussia, now belonged to Eastern Prussia, and it had a very complicated hierarchy and cultural management. There was the Schliefgärte in former Königsberg in Eastern Prussia, who was more or less the head, guided by this guy from Berlin. And in this rest of Western Prussia, the head was Ehrlich from Altland, who was more or less the arm of Goethe in this area. And this was the only institution, Altland Museum, which made archaeology in this region, because traditionally it was the provincial museum in Gdańsk. But Gdańsk was now a known state, and so all the heritage management structures disappeared. And so they rebuilt after the League of Nations vote, that means this rest of Western Prussia voted to stay by the German Reich instead of the maybe Soviet Poland, because in the days of the war, the Red Army was before Warsaw, and it was quite unclear if this new state survived or not. And therefore, more than 90% of the inhabitants of this area voted for Germany. Local, we had a problem that, for example, Marienburg, nowadays Marburg, lost more or less his whole district, and so it gets some small parts from the Stone district, which were incorporated into Marburg, for example, the village of Wielbark and the village of Sandhof, where the station was placed. So next year, 1925, you see the foundation of new museums. New museums, for example, the town museum in Marienburg, who was official responsible for the town area, and so-called Heimatmuseum West Prussia in Marienwerder, which was responsible for all the district around it. And the founders of the museum are Folkman, a teacher from Marburg, and another teacher, I forgot the name now, Waldemar Heim, who founded the museum in Marienwerder. And there was still concurrence who was responsible for which area. And so between Marienwerder and Marienburg, there is Stuben district, and both wanted that this district belongs to their museum. And in this case, Marienwerder was more successful, so there were more or less illegal excavations from Marienburg Town Museum in Stuben district. But this museum had more or less a task to force the German cultural influence in this border regions. To say border region, the border, the German Reich was in this time at the Nogat River. And at the high bank, there was an excavation of a graveyard from Wielbark. And during the time of Volkmann, the founder of this museum, they excavated more than 1,700 objects, and 1,500 of them were burials. Some smaller later excavations after 1933 found some more burials, and then there was some Polish excavations mid of the 80s who recognized where the big excavation were, and since some years there are German-Polish excavations at the border of this graveyard, and since 2 years there's a European project, so-called Wielbark Archaeology Field School, who concerns with the most western parts of this graveyard. And this graveyard played an important role in local as also regional politics, because all important people, like the founder of the museum, who was member of the town council, he was responsible for culture. And the important major in this time, Pavelczyk, who was a good friend of Hindenburg, published, for example, a book called Marienburg, and there are two things why Marienburg belongs to Germany. First of all, the Marienburg, the UNESCO World Cultural Heritage, biggest medieval castle, and for sure, the Goths in Wielbark. So it was clear that the excavations, the finds in the museum, as also as the historic monument, are arguments in the cultural battle against Polish claims and for tourism, because they had some economic problems at the border of the German Reich. Okay, then there was a break in German history, as also in European history, in the 30s. Okay, all these people, the council, town council management was thrown out 1933, and therefore there was also a gap in excavations. And after it came the new rule in Germany, so-called fascism, and they used archaeology in quite other way. For example, they made analyses of the old excavations and made some nice mappings. For example, Rainer Schindler wrote a famous book, The Settlement History of Goths and Gepids in the Lower Vistula area, and he made some nice mappings. For example, this one, there are graveyards of the Rugi who were thrown out by newcoming Goths, and this time, 1940, we said, We know it from the history, we can do so. And this is a mapping where to throw out the Polish people from the new German Reich. So this is a mapping for deportation. So sometimes archaeologists do so. And all the others, then we have next time spaces, the same graveyards used by Goths and Gypids, and then they left the Gypids. This is the old interpretation. And based on the excavations in Wielbark, there were plans made for the future. That means it was before starting of Second World War that there were plans how to research Gothic archaeology. One base is the research of Blume, who was a scholar of Hosina, and also the results of Schindler from Linz. And then was the question researching in Ukraine and looking for resisting Germanic people in the Vistula Delta area based on graveyard from Wielbark. Now, they have 3,000 graves, you know, it's not true, but this was planning, knowing what happened next time. Okay, it's also how to explain it, SS archaeology, that means it was quite political archaeology. And this very political affiliated archaeology has some consequences, not only in Marburg itself. So this was a castle after the very successfully German politics. Okay, there are not only German politics and archaeology. There's also the other side, or the same side. It's Polish archaeology. Poland was founded in 1919 was formed the first archaeology chair in Poznan University, and there was Professor Józef Koszewski, who started Polish archaeology. The term is right, I would say. And the interpretation of the same evidence, okay, he excavated, for example, the burial graves in Odry or the graveyard in Oxivia. Interpretation was quite easy. There is a pre-Roman culture, Oxivia. It's quite clear. It's a coast branch of the Slavonic tribes. Because you know that the Slavonic tribes are there since the age. And then there's a Gothic Gypidian culture. So it's a Polish archaeology, but if you remember Reinhard Schindler, it's the same. Only the interpretation is quite a little bit different. We know there came three ships with about 150 Visigoths, Ostrogoths, and Gypids. But the population there were Slavonic. The Goths came and they went. And the late Roman period, the Gothic Gypidian culture, there is broad Slavonic population, and there is a leading layer of some Germanic kings. This is one thing. And also they lived during the migration period. And there is more or less no break in this reputation between 1990, the founding of the Polish state, and 1969. There's a small change in interpretation mid of the 50s, because then there exists a big brother, and the big brother had the idea that the homeland of the slaves are not Poland. It must be somewhere in the Soviet Union. So, but in Poland, this idea was not really accepted, because they know that Poland is the homeland of all Slavic tribes. But then there was another change in Europe, and Poland developed democracy and connected with them, for for example, Free Press, Gazeta Wyborcza is the leading liberal newspaper, maybe like El País in Spain or Le Monde in France, and there in the scientific part it was clear, goes black and white, they are important. So there is a new interpretation. But the area where this Gothic idea was developed is not the Worcester region, which was focus of discussion in the 20s and early 30s. It's now at the Ukrainian border. So this is an area out of the focus in any discussion until late 80s. So this was a region quite unknown because the archaeology structures there were former Russian. You have to know this is area which was until 1918 Russian, officially. And then there were some excavations more or less at the eastern border of Poland, and there it was possible to speak about Goths, real Goths. And it was another Polish archaeologist, Andrzej Kukowski, who developed the idea of Gothic Poland. So they made some interesting books like The Treasures of the Ostrogoths. This is the title. Okay, it's concerning his excavation at the eastern border of Poland. So, and here's also the big graveyard now excavated by Reinhard Schindler, another myth in modern archaeology, and wrote a book about Gothic archaeology in eastern Poland and about the Goths from Scandinavia until the Campi Gotoro. So now this area is back. But why? What are the frames? An important frame was changed in Europe end of the 80s, and then there's a new constitution of the Republic of Poland from 1997. And there, in the Article 5, are the duties of the Polish state. First, the Republic safeguard the independence and integrity of their territory. This is done with the treaties with Germany. There was no question of claiming lands. And then there's somewhere the safeguard of the national heritage. And now the national heritage has special position in the construction of the Polish state. So the Republic of Poland creates the conditions for the spread and equal access to culture, which is the source of the identity of the Polish people, its existence and development. So the idea of Poland is now based on its culture. And the Republic of Poland helps Polish people residing outside its borders to maintain the connection to the national culture heritage. So the idea of the state is not based on history, not based on religion, it's based on national heritage. So archaeology has a very important position in the Polish politics, and this since the founding of this state. We have to know that at least two prime ministers of the Polish Republic were archaeologists. But sometimes there are problems with national heritage. There's another nice book, The Vandals, also from Kukowski, and there wrote the president of the Polish Republic, more or less, it's for us now not important which tribes or people lived in prehistory on Polish territories. We are have their heritage. Okay, if they say it in connection with Vandals, then it's quite clear that the national heritage is composed by many things, not only something have to do with Poland, more or less 1/3 of the territory was German before the Second World War. And under these circumstances, it's not possible to develop some things. For example, again, Andrzej Kołkowski, okay, is very active, but he's not here. So now, last year, new book, there is really the Gothic homeland in Eastern Poland. And if you don't want to look last year, Olympics, make a weekend, Gothic weekend in Masmowetz. Don't laugh about it. You have alternatives. You can go to Masmowetz or Krylov, or you can go to the Gothic stone circles in Gibnica. So, Monday night, the newest version disappeared somewhere in my computer, so I couldn't present you the posters from this year's events. But this is now very present and public propaganda, and also with many money from Europe and Polish state. And it's quite clear there are strong battles for the Gothic land against what was formulated the expansive political Roman Imperium. So now in Eastern Poland, they defend Gothic lands against Roman claims. And also, while I speak about it, my excavations are also connected with regional administration, and there was even Jerzy Skosieniec, now vice major from Marlborough County, who said to the press, students will excavate Goths. So they came from all Europe to excavate Goths. So maybe you don't know that this German forerunners used also the same graveyard. Yes, they are Goths, come here. And we want to develop touristic offers. This is the reason the town helps us to excavate this famous graveyard. So sometimes it's quite difficult. I don't believe that there are Goths, but should I say to the press, vice major is wrong? So, thank you for your attention.